by hand demonstrated how you become consequential. And what we say here in this place and what we're doing here in this place has repercussions around the world. No, we are not the biggest. We're not the most well-known. No, we're not. We're just the most powerful. That's all. We're just the most powerful. And now this is your opportunity to call in. The telephone lines are now open. The number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your access code to the Blackest Radio program in existence. And for everybody else out there who didn't get a chance to call in yesterday because phone lines, of course, as usual, you may not be able to get through. So definitely this will be your opportunity. As always, call in early, and you can definitely make sure you give yourself more assuredness to be listened to. Now, what you're having here is a situation where our words are changing the landscape. You have grown accustomed to the idea that you can touch, but you can't touch anything else. That they can affect you, but you can't affect anything else. You don't have a string of white supremacists or government agents, agent provocateurs, or whatever that was last night. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter. You see, it doesn't matter who the enemy is when you have power. You see, we have power in this place, and that's why you need to get behind it and you need to back it. Because we have power here. And that's why when those people show up, they can be laughed at. They can be lampooned. Their calls actually made us stronger, made us look better. That was what they did. In this place, that's all they can do. They can swing. What can they hit? They can talk, but what real damage can they do? They can do nothing. They can do nothing at all except look at us. Brothers and sisters, this is what power looks like. This is what power does. Power defines the social landscape, the way that Malcolm X defined black empowerment for us. The way that the Black Panthers defined black defense for us. That's why they call. And that's why they're mad. That's why they're angry. That's why they are livid with themselves. Because they come to this place and you have to play by our rules. Because we built the table. In the old days, our grandparents and great-grandparents begged you for a seat at your table. We begged for nothing here. We got all the seats. We built the table. We built the room that the table is in. That's why you're here, and that's why you're listening. You're here and you're listening because you recognize real power when you see it. And that's why you want to try to keep a close eye on all the goings on, as I explained last night, under slave law. Black people could not get together in a group and discuss anything unless one white person was present. They wanted to make sure that you had it inculcated and conditioned into you that your meeting is not valid if you didn't bring us along. In the 21st century, we have changed all that. We're putting together a major media operation that you will have no control over. You will have no say over. And that's why the enemy from without and the enemy from within is angry, incensed. Because they see something that they don't have a say in. You see, all the Negroes, I had one person today, they were talking about when I said that black folk focus on intangibles, too much garbage intangibles. They sat up here and said that the pyramids that we need to learn about the pyramids, because if the pyramids can generate electricity, we can create a global grid. Well, first of all, my first suggestion is don't hit a bong before you make comments. The second thing is cowards run and hide. Cowards bow when white supremacy enters the room. That's what cowards do. Cowards jump and leap for the intangible. They run for cover behind make-believe. They want you to focus on what they think and not on what they have done. They want us to sit and talk about what they believe and not what they've actually accomplished. And that's why the speech in this place is so dangerous to all of them. Coonery knows it's dangerous because they will no longer be listened to. White supremacy knows it's dangerous because they will no longer be obeyed. And that's why what we've done here has changed everything. Long before 7 a.m. ever comes out, we have already started transforming the landscape. Let's open up the lines here. Let's take a caller from 480. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, how's it going, hey, Jason? Black First.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm Chris. Calling from Phoenix, from Detroit, but I actually moved to Atlanta now.
Running around the States, brother. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, really just wanted to call in. It's been a while, man, with the move and the job and everything. But I just wanted to call and congratulate you on your masterpiece that you've put together. And I also wanted to, you know, tip my hat to you because even though I always catch the broadcast the day after or, you know, or after whenever it was live, I've, you know, there are detractors who will say that, you know, you gang up on the on your people who don't agree with you on the call. But I heard the episode, I don't know if it was last night or whatever, but with the guy who just went ballistic and because, you know, he tried to get free advertisement. And he couldn't see that you were giving him a lesson in you don't come in and expect something for nothing. And, you know, he went crazy, whatever. And the fact that you allowed him to be a lunatic live on the air to be a lesson to people, I thought that was very big of you, you know. And I really expected you to be more Black Ayatollah than Jason Black. But, you know, just to give everyone gets a fair shot with you, no matter how much the fool or the genius, I think that's cool, man. And I appreciated you giving them a shot. I mean, foolishness exposes itself. And who does it better than Jason Black? So, you know, I don't have anything in particular to talk about. I just wanted to, you know, give you a standing ovation, man. I'm very proud of what you've done. I'm proud that the intelligent Black community has come together. You know, I'm actually glad that, you know, Professor Truth has been, you know, active on the program because when he goes into his monologues, you know, I feel like he represents Black muscle. You know, he has a voice that really there's nothing that he can say that'll sound friendly, and I think we need more of that. Even when he talks, he's not into showing his teeth and smiling and, you know, just looking a fool. And I like I said, the broadcast is, I mean, it's coming along by leaps and bounds, man. So thank you, man.
Well, first of all, as a Black male, what did you think of that? What you heard him last night representing us.
I mean, like I said, it was disgusting because he came to your show and tried to wipe his ass on it. And it's just indicative of, that's a female trait, you know, it's very feminine and just, there's nothing but a man would do, you know, regardless of, he was wrong, you checked him. And when you do wrong by people, you're subject to their justice. So it was disgusting.
Now, did you understand what bad business that was? that even if that was his attempt at legitimately building something, why is it that as black males, we don't understand bad business?
You know, that comes from not having, you know, not ever seeing true business being done. We do things. I think Neely Fuller, and I know you've quoted him before, so you're familiar with his work. He said we do things in the three T's, tacky, trashy, or terroristic. So, you know, when it comes to business, not having a father in the home, not seeing your father actually own and control anything, and if you did see him, he was not an upstanding citizen in most cases, you know. So everybody, they come in and treat everything like a hustle. Hey, man, let me throw my website out there, and you know, we brothers, look out, man. You know, instead of asking, you know, hey, man, you mind if I give a shout out, or waiting to be, you know, asked for his information. So, you know, it was just bad all the way around. And instead of being an adult male and just, you know, all right, I'll take my lumps. I was wrong, Jason. You know, accept it, soak up the game, and move on to another topic. He reacted like a petulant child. And it was just disheartening to hear, man, to be honest. And this is coming from me. I live in Atlanta now, which is a black man's nightmare when it comes to just how it's functioning, you know, the extremely high homosexual or blatant homosexual rate. And it's like another universe, because this is Georgia. This ain't South. This ain't like Miami, which really ain't the South. This is Georgia. You know, this is still pickup trucks and cut off flannel shirts, nigger, get off my lawn part of America. And it's a homosexual haven. And it's a huge culture shock. So to hear that and then have to live and see what's out here, it's like you're our only hope. You know what I'm saying? To be quite honest.
Well, the problem is that Atlanta has been allowed to run roughshod for so long. And since I was in high school back in the 90s, that is what Atlanta has been. And you got a bunch of people online and everything, and you have to be careful. When somebody says, I'm from Atlanta, that makes my ears go off. My radar goes up now when I hear somebody say, I'm from Atlanta. If it's a black male, especially. Because I know what's going on there.
Yeah.
I know what's happening in that place right now. And you just parachuting in, you can see it. That as black males, they've been led down. I mean, white supremacy is not scared of black males in Atlanta. They have no power. When they sold you on that Hotlanta crap, it was over. What the hell did you think? White supremacy was going to be scared of Hotlanta? A bunch of leather pants and feather boas? You think the Confederate flag dudes in their pickup trucks are worried about that? Once you did that, you were signaling your surrender. Once you did that, you signaled to them that power, wealth, and influence were off the table. You were not worried about that. That was what you showed them. That power, wealth, and influence are now officially off the table for us. And what do they focus on in Atlanta? Love and hip-hop? Bastard babies, strong and independent for the women, even though they're on Section 8, to the tune of 30,000 in a parking lot in East Point, Georgia. Oops. That's what they're doing now. That is what they're doing there. So when we don't respond that way, when we are talking about power and influence, that separates us from the herd right there. That separates us from the pack right there. And I think it's very interesting if you measure it all the way from the casual observers to the people on YouTube to the fakers and the frauds. When they say they're from Atlanta, that's your first sign there's trouble. They're not really focused on empowerment. They're focused on everything as some type of form of entertainment. And then you come to this place and we just give you a straight injection. And that's a shock to their system. You see, if I was in Atlanta, the first thing I would start doing is looking for black folk who got power and wealth. That's the first thing I do. The average black person goes to Atlanta and wants to know where the club is at. You didn't have enough clubs back in your own city, don't you know? You need to go to Atlanta to go and check out the nightlife. Does an Asian move to a new city for nightlife? Do Italians move to a new city for nightlife? How about Jews? How about Arabs? Do they move to a new city for the nightlife, talking about how great the clubs are? Or do they move to those places because they're chasing dollars? Because they see that as the next rung on the ladder of gaining power, wealth, and influence. All I can say is take a look at their incomes, take a look at what they've accomplished. I'll let that speak for itself. And we still don't get it, brother. You move from one city that could have been a major black enclave, Vegas, to Atlanta, which is about to become majority white again. I made the prediction last time Kasim Reed ran for mayor that he will be the last black mayor of Atlanta. They're going back to white rule again. I said it 4 years ago. And like I say, I can't sit up here and say it 4 years ago and then it come true and everything be a guess. We didn't guess our way through. We're all Detroiters now. And I didn't guess my way through New Orleans and what was going to happen there, or Detroit and what was going to happen there. And Atlanta, this is it, brother. We as black people, the era of black mayors, it took you 100 years to start the era of black mayors. And we are going to have lost it all within 20 years. If you start with David Dinkins in New York, David Dinkins, Coleman Young, Tom Bradley, the Morials, and then Ray Nagin, Ron Kirk in Dallas, Marion Barry to Adrian Fenty. I mean, we can go down the list. Kasim Reed, brother, we've lost it all. And it didn't take us a century to lose it. The most bleeding that we've suffered will have been in the last 5 years. Kwame Kilpatrick, Ray Nagin, the list goes on. Now Kasim Reed, just mark my words, if he wins re-election, it'll be by a hair. And because white folk think it's really groovy that you sold out black people all over the place, but he will not have a black successor. If he wins re-election, he will win it the same way that Obama did. He will win it on the strength that he can tell white folk, I didn't do nothing for black people. And that's a hell of a candidate for black folk to be supporting. You should have just voted for the white guys. At least you knew they were going to do nothing for you.
Yeah, you know what, Jason, that I had a conversation recently about, how ineffective Obama has been for his major constituency, which is black people. You know, to get over 90% of anybody's vote, you know, politics works. If they put you in power, you work in their best interest. And, you know, black people are only a group that he gets to shake his finger at and ignore, and will come back and say, yes, sir, can I have another? And people called me a traitor, a Benedict Arnold, for just not blindly supporting him. They say that their excuse is that he's America's president. He can't just be ours, you know. And I told them it's just crazy how black people have such a taste for insults and disrespect, you know, no matter who it's from. We swim in it. And it's just terrible. And in 20 years, we've lost all the major black towns as far as in politics. 20 years. Nobody, and it's not like within that time, you know, you didn't have Malcolm X to look to. You didn't have other black thinkers like, the writer of Powernomics. Dr. Claude Anderson, okay. Yeah, you had guys like him. He toured the nation, you know, looking for support, and everybody would rather be a slave to white supremacy. You know, instead of trying to commandeer the slave ship, they would much rather just get a better seat on it. And it's just crazy.
I'll let you have the last word.
Man, last word. Congratulations, Jason. Black first.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. Definitely going to be a thinning of the herd here going on. For those of you who are aware that the herd needs to be thin, for everybody else, I return you back to your genocidal extinction already in progress. Caller from 773, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Jason, this is Vernon from Chicago.
What's on your mind, brother?
Actually, I just happened to... Well, first I wanted to chime in on the call from last... Well, the call from... What was his name? Leo from last night? From last night's broadcast? Yeah,
okay.
Well, actually...
Just go ahead, Vernon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say, just to add on to what the last brother was saying, like, yeah, the guy just called in out of line. Like, he's calling into your platform. Why would you try to get free advertisement? And one thing that it did remind me of is, like, a lot of, people who bootleg DVDs and how they're trying to make an argument that, you don't want to support, you don't like supporting black people, but, okay, if you have a black person that spend a lot of time on creating this movie or documentary or whatever it is, and then you go and decide to bootleg it and start stealing some of the money off the person's pocket, and what makes them? Just like case in point, what has been going with, unfortunately, what it did to the, I think maybe the first couple of Hidden Colors, or might be the first one. Yeah, what your son has said. But there was something else I wanted to talk about, too. It was an old story that I just happened to see today. It was about a bank, a black-owned bank. It's called Seaway Bank and Trust Company, which is, at least according to Craig's Business, it's the third largest black-owned bank. And I just found out that they were, within the last year, that they've been in some financial trouble, and it's funny because I had a conversation with at least a couple friends of mine, and they were saying, I think one of them said something about, you know, that it was because if you have a black-owned bank, they might be under more scrutiny. I wouldn't say more scrutiny, but they're more on watch just because it's a black bank. I just wanted to know if that's actually true.
Well, any black business that's successful can definitely expect more scrutiny, but usually that scrutiny comes from black folks themselves. If they want the hookup for a pair of shoes, can you imagine some of the hookups they want at a black bank? Now, I want to give you all a sneak peek of something you'll find out in 7 a.m. I know I'm kind of jumping the gun, but just to let you know that this is well worth having. I want you to tell me right now, brother, how many black-owned banks do we have in the United States?
To be honest with you, I don't know. Other than the Seaway that's over here in the south side of Chicago, I'm not sure of any others.
According to the FDIC, first quarter 2014, the report is out. In the United States, we have 25 black-owned banks. 25.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guess how many Hispanic banks we have, everybody? 30. Guess how many Asian banks we have. Now, you may say, well, of course the Hispanics would have more. They're a couple of percentage points more in the population than we are, so of course they would have more. Okay, there are more black people than there are Asians. I'm talking about Pacific Islanders. Guess how many Asian banks we have in the United States? 76.
Wow.
More than three times as many banks as black people do in the United States. You all can go to the FDIC website. It'll show you. See, I've done the research so that you will know where to go. You can go to the FDIC website. It's got its listing of minority-owned banks, and it breaks them down by race. The Hispanics have 5 more than us, and the Asians have 2/3 more, have triple the amount that we got. What does that tell you? Just that one thing alone, what does that tell you about everybody else's priorities versus ours? Let's just compare us to the Asians. Now, you can talk about every damn thing else. There is no government program that helps set up an Asian bank. You see, they knew that an Asian bank would be very profitable for them. You know why? Because they already practice exclusionary economics in their own communities. So an Asian bank is a no-brainer and a must. We must have a bank owned by us in Chinatown. We got mm-hmm. the restaurant. We got the library. It's a no-brainer. Where's the bank? We must have our own bank. White folk can't come in here and run our bank. We are not going to hand white people our money for our bank. Practice group economics and everything else. The purpose of group economics was making the money. Naturally, we are not going to hand over our money to you. And the numbers bear this out. The numbers bear this out. That's a damn shame. But you see, we're not trying to build power, wealth, and influence. That's not what we're doing. In Chicago, black folks have that whole damn sea sewn up.
Yeah, the city was founded by a black man, by the way, which is crazy. That we don't own anything, well, rarely anything.
Every mayor of Chicago has been kissing black folks' asses verbally. What have they done? Or should I say, as Professor True said, what has Chicago insisted that they do? Professor Truth made the video, "We're All Detroiters Now," and in it he made the point that the problem with black people is not that we have the wrong demands. It is that usually when politicians show up, we have no demands at all. We can't even tell them what it is that we want. And when somebody like us stands up and starts saying, "This is what we want," Negroes will jump up and say, "You can't say that." White folk will tell you that we want government to spend on our white business. Oh, that's going to upset a lot of dumb, clod-footed, feces-flinging Negroes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Who want to talk about what we can't tell Barack Obama to do while they got no-bid contracts for Halliburton and Blackwater, i.e. Z, Kellogg, Brown & Root, Raytheon. But guess what? You all are giving white businesses government money every single day. And I'm not just talking about AT&T and Comcast, although I am including those. Brother, you live in Chicago. Who is paying for your sports stadiums? If you live in Dallas, who paid for Cowboy Stadium? Atlanta, Kasim Reed. Well, who owns the damn teams? White men. And black folks are sitting here, "Yay! Take my money and build a stadium." But you will not demand that government take that money and force a fund that will help to develop black-owned businesses. That you say you can't do that. You won't stop them from giving money to the NFL and the Major League Baseball. You won't stop them from doing that, but you will tell them that, "Well, what y'all doing ain't right. Don't give me anything." Now, am I making those things up? Anybody out there with a stadium in your city, you know it's true. Yankee Stadium just got built. Taxpayers are footing the bill for all this stuff. The city of Los Angeles is willing to take out $2 billion of credit if the NFL will move a team back to Los Angeles. The city is willing to go $2 billion in debt if the NFL will give them back a football team. Now, if you think it's a black man who's going to own that team, you're crazy as hell. We as black people do not have demands. Everybody's talking about reparations, but when it's time to go to the government and tell them what to give us, we don't want to say nothing. We don't want to say anything to government. That's why the reparations thing, when I hear most people say it, I don't give them any credence. Because if you're not willing to demand small things of your city council now, what the hell makes you think that you're serious about demanding wholesale reparations? Even demand a slush fund for black businesses. And I'm supposed to believe that you're going to demand reparations? Get the hell out of here. And Johnny just made a very good point in the chat room. By the way, the NFL is tax exempt, which is absolutely correct. By the way, everybody, they talk about how the players have to pay taxes on their salaries and whatnot. In case you all didn't know, the NFL is tax exempt. That's right. Congress made a law. Basically, its purpose was instituted to help promote football. I think we all can agree that football has been damn well promoted at this point, but the law is still in place for the NFL. They're tax exempt. The black male athletes have to pay taxes. The NFL itself does not. I believe that the NFL legally is categorized as a nonprofit, by the way. That's why they have to disclose what Roger Goodell makes. I want to say that Major League Baseball gave up its nonprofit status because they did not want to keep having to report what the commissioner of baseball makes. So I'm pretty sure about that, that they were all tax exempt. Major League Baseball gave up their tax exempt status so that they wouldn't have to keep reporting income, and the NFL kept it because, well, we can all see how, I guess, it works out for them. And most black people watch the damn games, clap like buffoons, and have no idea. Have no earthly idea that, by the way, Jerry Jones was given a $1 billion stadium with your tax dollars, but you're telling me that we can't demand anything from the same city and state government that took our money and gave it to Jerry Jones. We can't demand any of our money to go to benefit us. As a matter of fact, you'll have plenty of black folk defending Jerry Jones getting that money and condemning us saying that we don't deserve any. I'm just telling you right now. A group of people that disjointed and disorganized, how do you gain power? The way that you gain power is this broadcast. What we talk about here is how you gain power. Because this is the first time, understand something, a lot of folk listen to me right now, this is the first time they ever heard that the NFL was tax exempt. this is the first time that they ever thought about the fact, you know, he is right that Irving, you know, really the state of Texas, really, but they gave Dallas all that money for a stadium. And New York gave the Yankees a stadium. Want to give the Jets one, by the way. For those of you who don't know, all across the United States, white people have no problem demanding things. None whatsoever. Black folk cannot even tell you what it is they demand. And what I'm saying is that for you and me and us and we, from this day on, we have to demand power, wealth, and influence. And the first thing we have to do is shut down and shout down the ignorant and the moronic among us who are going to tell us that we can't ask for anything.
Yeah, well, actually, I just wanted to add, too, that you did mention about, you said how certain black folks said that they want, like, whenever, if there's, like, a black business involved, they always got to have some sort of white involvement. Well, actually, there was an example. Last April, I was working in, it was a conference for planners, and one of the planners that were involved, he came up to me, he gave me his card. I can assume he's probably from one of the black historical colleges. And, you know, I'm talking to him. He said, you know, yeah, well, we're trying to help you get into the business. I said, yeah, that sounds good, you know, so we'd be able to get our own. But it's just like his response was basically, oh, no, we got to have some sort of white people involved. And I'm like, why? And he's just so hell-bent on it. Like, I don't understand. If he has the experience, why not just start his own? But I don't know.
Black people do not feel courageous unless there's a white person co-signing it. That's just the bottom line. The average black person, if they don't have a white person to hold their hand, even for something that they themselves have been doing the whole time, they just lack confidence. Look at Dr. Dre. What the hell is Jimmy Iovine hanging off of Andre Young 20 years later for? Why? What is Dre doing with beats that he needs Jimmy Iovine for? You're supposed to be the damn producer and the musical genius. What's this guy doing here? Dre does not feel that he can do anything without this man.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he would at least get some businesses from the Jimmy Iovines, or even from Cohen, from Leo Cohen, and from those guys. But I guess after 20 years later, he's still the same person.
You all are assuming that Beats was Dre's idea. I know, I'm not supposed to say that, but you all are assuming that Beats is Dr. Dre's idea, that he was sitting around and said, you know what, everybody should have a pair of studio calibrated headphones built to my specifications, calibrated to my specifications. You all have just assumed that that's what happened. I'm telling you, based on what I've seen, it was probably Jimmy Iovine who said, Dre, I've got a deal to make these headphones, and we want to put your name on them to license them to help their marketability. And Dre said, that's a good idea, Jimmy. And Beats was born. Because if you notice, the Beats' only real claim to fame is Beats by Dre. That's
right, credibility.
So Jimmy Iovine was not going to make any money trying to license a set of headphones with his name. That's not going to work. Dre's job was to help give them a marketable product, and that's what he did. But I'm just telling you right now, over, it makes more sense if you think that, you know, maybe this wasn't Dre's idea. Look at the way he's acting. Is he acting like somebody who owns a company, or is he acting like what he's always been? Somebody who's along for the ride. Go take a look at that picture. The one they did, all the people were trying to celebrate about that. You got Dre standing next to Iovine, Tim Cook, and another white fella when they say that the deal got approved. 75% of that room is white male. But you want me to believe that you got some pull. How is it that you got pull and 75% of the people in that room are white? People need to stop dreaming and fantasizing and dreaming up an Andre Young who does not exist. Black folk love fabricating heroes who don't really exist. Because we think that that's going to protect us or insulate us from what we ourselves have not done. We love talking about the intangible. Because we think that that is going to insulate us from what we ourselves are not doing. That's why all these black folks online are scholars of the pyramids, cannot tell you how, they can tell you everything about building a pyramid, can't tell you a damn thing about building a lemonade stand. And by the way, they never show you how they built their pyramid either. They can go up and down the damn world about stuff from 5,000 years ago, these intellectual fetishes, can't tell you anything about what you're dealing with right now today. But their mouths are steady bumping. They come to this place and they get angry. They get angry because we actually think things over. We actually think things over, and we actually try to find out, you know, let me find out if that's actually accurate or not. The way that I find out if things are accurate, brother, is I determine, can I execute what you just said? Now, if I can, it may be accurate. But if we get started and you don't even give us anything to execute, that's a problem. So I'm very sorry about the situation in Chicago. It could have been much different. You got Chief Keef right now. That's your emissary. That's your representative in Chicago.
Oh, don't even remind me of him. Oh my goodness!
You all went from Michael Jordan to Chief Keef. If
let's
that
not forget
is
Kanye
not
West.
The definition of a decline, I don't know what that is. I mean, does Obama really represent Chicago? Can't
nope.
we just be
He's
honest?
He's not even originally from here.
Lord. He doesn't even present black society, much less Chicago. Where are his childhood friends from Chicago? Oops. As a matter of fact, show me any black people that Barack Obama was friends with, quote, friends with before he got to Chicago.
Nobody.
And pretty much everybody you can name is pretty much it. Jeremiah Wright's church. If you remove Jeremiah Wright's church, you have no connection to the black community at all by Barack Obama. No wonder Latinos gave him 75% of their vote. We gave him 95% of ours, and who's he been bowing to? How the hell does that work? We as black people have not come to the table with our demands. And without demands, you don't get any progress. you don't get any progress when you didn't even bring a demand. So I'm hoping that we can start that here in this place by raising the bar a little bit. And I think we are making progress with that. Take a look at how the white supremacists and the coons and the dogs and everybody else have been jumping up. They would not be jumping. If we were sounding like Barack Obama in Chicago, they wouldn't be messing with us. That doesn't bother them. Chief Keef and Chirac Shouty, that don't scare white. That doesn't bother white supremacy. There is not one white supremacist in America who is batting an eye or losing a second of a night's sleep over Chirac Shouty and your two or three baby mamas. Nobody's losing sleep over that.
That's true.
I dare to say to you all tonight that the only event in black society that is worrying or disturbing white supremacy is here at this place. That's it. Everybody else, no. I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, actually, just as usual, I love listening to your broadcast, and, you know, I'm just glad, I just hope that, you know, just this conversation can finally lift up this, well, at least the situation that's going on here in Chicago, hopefully. Well, like, people like me and I think the young lady, Naima, from last, that called in last night's broadcast.
Well, you have a few black people in Chicago who do understand what's going on and are concerned, but there's only a few of you, and you all better get together, because coonery and buffoonery gets together every day. Those of you who got some sense in Chicago, you better start comparing notes. You better start comparing notes. You better start linking up with each other and getting together with each other, and at least knowing where each other physically is in that area.
Yeah, because we don't want to see any more shows like Chicagoland here.
Yeah, I mean, white folk love that kind of drama. But you see, they make money off of that. You all need to get together with each other, because in Detroit, they sold off your municipal. They've been waiting to get their hands on that water system for a while. What's going to happen to the price of water in Detroit, everybody? After privatizing Detroit's water system, what's going to happen to the price of water?
Increase.
Don't you all recognize genocide when you see it? There's the James Bond movie where the bad guy says that it's the world's most valuable resource. We have to control as much of it as we can. You all were worried about some damn Hotep garbage in Detroit. What you're going to do when the price of water in Detroit is the same as the price of gas per gallon? What you going to do? Tell me, how you going to nut up? How you going to act a fool when you're paying as much for water as you do for gas? Don't you know they'll be turning off water all over the place? And will not be turning it back on. Tell me, how long can you live in Detroit without water? No, see, y'all aren't going to get this kind of talk from the Hotep idiots. The Hotep hoes. And the African coons. You're not going to get that from them. They are not going to say anything to you all. First of all, these idiots don't even know that they are a privatization of the water supply in Detroit. First of all, they don't know that. Second of all, they don't know about the restructure of the pension plans in Detroit. Oh, y'all didn't know about that. They didn't even know about the emergency finance managers. I was the person who had to tell everybody about that. I was the one who had to tell everybody about that. And nobody is looking at that. They don't understand that they're going to hit you on all sides in Detroit. In Detroit and Chicago is next, by the way, brother. Have you heard me talk about the economic bombs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did hear you.
Yeah, now for everybody who's just listening in for the first time, I coined a phrase, economic bombs, and Manhattan is the poster child for it. You go into poor neighborhoods and you build a brand new, super expensive structure. If it's an old, dilapidated business neighborhood, you build a new business plaza. And what that does is that doubles or triples the property values for the surrounding businesses. Well, that's all fun and games until tax season comes around. And then the city tells you that your property taxes have tripled or quadrupled. You're not ready for that. And if you're in a residential area, it's even worse. You're living in Brooklyn. You're living in Harlem, $800 a month. They build a condo, a brand new condo complex on the next block. And that complex is going to have like a blast yield. Like a bomb going off is going to affect and blast everything for the next two or three blocks. It is going to immediately double, triple, or even quadruple the real estate prices for everything for two or three blocks, including wherever you live. And even if you live in an apartment building, you're going to be like Leo Grand. The property values go up, which means the rent goes up. You were paying $100 a month. Now they expect you to pay $2,400 a month. Now your income has not doubled, but the rate you have to pass. That's a bomb. That's a weapon of mass destruction. And it's going to wipe out everybody who cannot afford and does not have the money to survive it. And Chicago is next. First Manhattan. And Detroit is prime for it, by the way. With the property values in Detroit being dunked and slammed as bad as they are, don't you all know that means for every piece of new construction that goes up, it's setting off an economic bomb in that neighborhood? What are you all going to do in Detroit when all these British people and Arabs and Asians who are buying up whole streets and whole blocks in Detroit, what are you going to do when those guys start building brand new subdivisions or business parks or whatever on that property? What you going to do then? Because you thought the land was worthless. It's not worthless. It's just you can't do nothing with the land if you're broke. And they're going to use that to clear you out. And those of you who still can't, if they miss you with the economic bombs, they're going to get you with the environmental bomb. Now they got you with the water. They are going to make sure, coming or going, one way or another, you can't afford to live here. One way or another, they're going to get you. And I'm telling you, that's coming to Chicago. Just remember, I was the first person to tell you. Started in Manhattan, starting in Detroit now, next up, Chicago. Ooh. A lot of black folk who don't like the dry and unentertaining discussions that we have here understand when the bulldozers start pulling up for them and when they start getting those green or red notices on their front door telling them to move out, they're going to make a beeline for the black channel. It's going to be too late to help you. Right now, it's too late to help Detroit. Brother, I can't do nothing for Detroit. It's too late. Harlem, there might be a little bit of time left for Harlem, but if black folk in Harlem do not start owning what they are renting, there's not going to be nothing you can do for Harlem. Black authority, what is the answer? The answer is your ability to answer these three questions with a yes. Do you own it? Do you control it? And are you passing it down? If you cannot answer yes to those three questions in your current living conditions, you are out of compliance. That's the answer. You need to be able to answer yes to all three of those questions. If you cannot, you are out of compliance. So this broadcast may not be very interesting to a number of you, but when you get your emergency finance manager notice and when they start putting the notices on your door, you're going to make a beeline for us. By then, it'll be too late. Don't let people fool you. Professor Black Truth knows what we're talking about. Don't let people fool you into thinking that they don't know we're here. They know we're here. They think they just got time to ignore it. I'll just go listen to folk talking about dysfunctional relationships, coonery and buffoonery, jackassery. That's what I'll focus on. That intelligent stuff, I'll save that for later. When they get their nigga wake-up call, they'll be the first ones on this phone whining and pitching and moaning. I'm going to start getting... Anybody who hasn't called in from Detroit before now, I know who they are. When we start getting that group of new callers calling in, I'm just going to be right there to tell them, and what do you do about it? Then what you really mean is that you sat there and you played ping pong with your own annihilation. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
I enjoyed listening to the broadcast. I'm really learning things in every broadcast that you do in Black First.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Professor Truth, here's the real issue for me. The real issue for me is that up until now, and I think that's getting ready to change, but up until now, it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle for you and me to get people to pay attention to this stuff. I mean, Adam Africa and the Real Greeks got a lot of people's attention. But not for the right reason, I don't feel like. We're all Detroiters now should have gone a whole lot more viral than it did. People don't have an appetite for intelligence until they don't have any other choice. And that's not going to cut it in the 21st century. Not when people are looking to annihilate you. That's not going to make it.
We're entering the single most unforgiving time since the beginning of the Atlantic slave trade. A lot of black people are asleep switch. They got their brains tuned to radio station C-O-O-N, all stupid all the time. And what they're thinking is that basically John Conyers is going to come in with a cape and save them. Just out of curiosity, did John Conyers stop the white folk from completely gutting Detroit's economy? Did John Conyers lead the way for black people to get their hooks into General Motors? See, that's what the 70s and 80s and the 90s should have been about in Detroit.
Did John Conyers stop white supremacy from coming after his own wife?
John Conyers happens to be one of the clown princes of the coons, who only a fool would have any confidence in, which explains that weirdo who called in last night. And this is what black people think is cute. John Conyers, see, John Conyers is on my level. Oh, you mean stupid? See, stupid people are not going to win the war against white supremacy. We have not been fielding our best and brightest. We've been allowing the clown gade to take over instead of the B-1 brigade. And what do we have to show for it? We are being routed. There is a race war going on, and black people are being routed. It's not even a fight. We're just on the run, running for our lives. Where to? Anywhere. Well, the problem is we're not out of places to run to. Sooner or later, and it's going to be sooner, we're going to have to make our stand. Now, when we do, one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to be like when the Zulus took on the British at the Battle of Isandlwana. The Brits thought that they had the Zulus pushed back, and the Zulus came back hard. Slaughtered over 5,000 Brits. The official estimate they like to use is 3,000, but the thing is, they lowball the numbers because British propaganda, as American propaganda today, is always geared toward making their losses look like less than they are. Otherwise, the citizenry who have paid for the wars and send their kids into the meat grinders might start thinking, holy crap, we're losing. But the Zulus came back hard and slaughtered them. And what happened was it stunned the Brits. at that point, they were sitting there going, we better rethink this whole white Africa thing, because this may not necessarily be the cakewalk we envisioned. They got the doggone Brits to take them seriously. See, that's what, there's no substitute for bold action. All of you Negroes out there who think that you're going to beg and coon your way to a better tomorrow, Massa ain't trying to hear that anymore. He's already got himself a new group of people who have already proven that they'll go along with white supremacy in Latin America. And they don't mind being bred out of existence because, truth be told, the Latino is just basically an invention of the horny Spaniards and compliant Native Americans. So they're fine with that. They're cool with that. Either you are going to build your own place or you will have no place at all. And we only want builders here. We don't want any hangers-on. No window shoppers. No people who basically didn't decide to get with the program until the white supremacy finally came for them and had a gun to the side of heads. People that slow are not good part of our squad. And make a mistake. Everyone is squatting up. Even the coons are squatting up. Granted, that's going to make them easier for the bad guys to mow down. But everyone's squatting up, so you better get with this squad and back it to the hilt. Now, how are we going to turn the situation around? The first thing we got to do is take control of a culture that is completely out of control. We cannot have white supremacy. We cannot have the dominant culture sitting here dictating terms to us and telling us what's important. That's how you get stupid stuff like you get the cover of The Atlantic, a rag that's not even fit to wipe your butt with, talking about Jim Crow and giving a little bit of lip service to the idea of reparations. Let me tell you something. You're not going to get any reparations until you prove that you've got enough power where the dominant society better do something to calm you down. That's the only way you're going to get what you're supposed to be getting. When you get some power, you're going to start finding that all sorts of people who previously looked at you and said you're not to be taken seriously, all of a sudden they're going to be taking you real seriously. Real seriously. A lot of people didn't take the Filipinos in D.C. very seriously. Oh, they're just a bunch of housemaids and gardeners. Yeah, but now they are in complete control of the healthcare system, especially nursing. You can't become a nurse in D.C. practically unless Filipino. Mary and Barry found that out, running his mouth about them Filipino nurses till he wound up having that embolism. Then all of a sudden he's sitting here making real nice. Yeah, that's what happens when they got power and you don't. As black people, we got this idea that apparently we're going to find a substitute for power. I'd like to know what that is. I would really love to know what your substitute for power is going to be and how long is it going to last. It's not going to last very long because at the end of the day, those who control the society, those who have a seat at the table of power, they're the ones who decide how long the people standing around the table of power get to stand there. And they're getting to the point now where they're not liking having all these spectators around. What are you still doing here? See, that's what happens when black people come to the party late. They got the idea that they're going to get mercy from people who have never shown it to them. And they start looking for leadership from people who have never shown it. John Conyers. You better not say that name too loudly around intelligent black society. Otherwise, at least 10,000 black people with their heads on straight will die laughing. John Conyers could not do anything for himself. How is he going to help you? He's part of the problem. John Conyers is one of that group of crooks who sat there and taught you that you're supposed to be finding a white person to beg for your daily bread.
Well, I mean, if you're going to congratulate somebody over something, shouldn't we be talking about somebody who has some victories under his belt?
No, of course not.
In the last 10 years, what victories does John Conyers have under his belt? Jesse Jackson Jr., Jesse Jackson Sr., Barack Obama. Show me the victories that they have won for their people that warrant them getting any type of accolades. You voted for them, you put them in office, they got lifetime health care and lifetime pensions, but you can't name one thing that they've done recently that's benefited you in any way. Barack Obama won't even go after George Zimmerman. But you're going to give him credit for somehow white supremacy somehow oppressing him? Far as I can tell, they're on the same team. And we are congratulating John Conyers for what? What has he earned? What battles has he won?
He's won the battle to become the MVP of coonery. He certainly won that one. He's the most valuable player that that the dominant society had up in the Midwest. His job was to get black people into a subservient position, get their eye off the ball. Black people, even in your impoverished state, the fact that you got numbers does mean something. You can actually, believe it or not, if you leverage the votes, believe it or not, votes can still be effective, but only if they are aggregated and only if they are aggressive, consistently aggressive. There were some black people who were in Birmingham, I believe it was, and they got together and put the muscle on the city council, or rather, I think it was probably the county commission, and they got some land given to them. Granted, of course, you're going to get around property taxes. Only corporations could do that. That's, you know, you got to get to the next level. But a group of people who have no money, if they put their vote together, and if there's enough votes, and if those votes are disciplined, you can make stuff happen. Why are you sitting here begging for consideration when, at the end of the day, if you want power, you got to take it? And you can't sit there letting anyone shame you into the idea that apparently you shouldn't be asking for certain things. Let me tell you something. White supremacy and the dominant culture, they don't ask for anything. They just take it. And you can sit there and complain all you want. They got a nice line of rhetoric for that, but at the end of the day, they ain't giving nothing back. Intelligent black society could learn a lesson from that. If you want the land must be taken. And to hold that land, you better have enough force to hold on to it. And all the people who are telling you that there's going to be another way to get there, they're just lying to you. And you better start getting bold about calling them on that. Intelligent black society is not going to be running around making a lot of friends. That's the first thing we better get used to. Dr. John Henry Clark said, you don't have any friends anywhere. The same thing goes for intelligent black society. You don't have any friends anywhere. Fully 50% of black America is of no use to us. And the other 50%, kind of flaky. Not too sure about that. But when you see what we accomplished just with one little publicity war chest, perhaps we should be a little less concerned about how many friends we have and much more concerned about what a group of focused people who know what power is about are able to do. Our numbers are not going to be what wins this thing for us. What's going to win it is going to be our discipline. We are going to take control of our culture. I mean, if you go back to the 1990s, the Republican Party was in disarray. They were looking at Bill Clinton, thanks to the Democratic Leadership Council. The Democrats had beaten the Republicans at their own game, which was getting the donor class in America, that moneyed class, the contributor class, to look at the Democrats and say, maybe we should get behind the Democrats. The Democrats can keep the unwashed masses quiet so that they don't disturb the powerful people, and they can also continue to cater to the powerful people's wishes better than Republicans. The Republicans had a real problem. Because what they had were a bunch of rank-and-file GOPers who apparently thought that they were going to go back to the good old days of Richard Nixon, and that day was dead. But ironically, it was one of Richard Nixon's supporters, one of the young college Republicans, Karl Rove, who sat there and said, we are going to come up with something far better. What we're going to do is we're going to take control of a GOP party, and next thing you know, here comes Tom DeLay. The whip, the hammer, they called him. And the Republicans put in for an effort, a hyper-aggressive move. And they also coordinated themselves with talk radio. It's no accident that another of the Nixon administration alumni, Roger Ailes, is the head of Fox News. They were tired of arguing with CNN, tired of arguing with the three big networks, tired of arguing with the New York Times. It wasn't a matter of they couldn't get space. What they looked at, they were sitting there going, we don't want an even hand on the front page coverage. We want the upper hand. We have our interest, and we are determined that our interest will prevail. Well, what about fairness? To hell fairness. We want to win. And that's what the neoconservative movement was born from. The Republicans saw a culture among their own party that just wasn't going to cut it. So they started deciding that instead of trying to look for converts, they were going to root out the heretics. And it worked, because at the end of the day, as Bill Clinton observed, when Al Gore lost, strong and wrong will beat weak and right every time. The Republicans were a minority politically, but they ruled the roost. And they weren't trying to live in nostalgia. That's what these people who talk about Barbara Boxer, what the heck has she ever done? Who talk about Maxine Waters, what the hell has she ever done? The Kilpatrick clan, what the hell have they ever done? That's what these people want. They want nostalgia. Always looking to the past. Well, the only thing that looking to the past is going to do for you is make it where you will back into your grave. Well, we're not going with you. Intelligent black society has no interest in nostalgia. We learn from our history, but we are not trying to live in the past. We are far more interested in the glorious black future that is coming, that we are going to not will into being, but we are going to build it into being. Because that's what we do here. You know, there were some people who actually had the nerve to lampoon the idea of building. Certain frauds who apparently felt that that was a laughable idea. But look at what we did. I mean, certain frauds, whenever they decided to look to their own supporters for financial contributions, they couldn't do it. Did. The reason why is if you sit there making people think that life is a joke, you can't suddenly turn around and come to them with some serious concerns. They're just not going to go for it. There's not the biggest audience here, but there is the strongest audience. I'm really proud of you. Oh, by the way, just in passing, you know, I feel sorry for those of you who are, can't decide whether or not you want to be with Intelligent Black Society or whether or not you want to continue to give lip service to the frauds. I mean, what is a fraud going to do for you? They're going to pretend that there's going to be some sort of documentary coming that's never even going to see the light of day. They're just going to talk about it. I forget what the title of it is. I think they call it A Fraudulent America. Supposedly it's going to be an expose about scam artists operating on YouTube, I hope. We're not looking to be part of that. The kind of talk that you get here is going to be strong, and it needs to be. Because if you're going to complain about dead babies in Chicago, then the next question becomes, how do we get lower this low? It was because a dominant society that rendered us economically castrated, and we got a whole group of a fifth column operating inside of us. The coon class, the fraud and faker class, the bastard baby maker class, people with no direction, who don't take the world seriously, who don't see the value of building, and who get the future through the lens of how many people am I going to sleep with? No, there is no room for those who do not understand that this is a fight. And we're not going to fall in love with the struggle. We're going to fall in love with the power. And we're going to fall in love with exercising that power. That way we won't be looking up 20 years from now, still sitting here begging for white people to give us reparations. You don't beg for reparations. You take your reparations to do that. Can you have a change of mind? Intelligent black society's cultural change begins with you. It starts with you. When I talk about people who have one foot in coon country and the other toe dipping in intelligent black society, I'm talking about you, the people here listening. Are you the ones who see the world and say it is not right that our people do not have the upper hand? It is not right that every time I look up, I either see a room full of white people and increasingly white people, Asians and Hispanics and no black people, or do you look and say, you know what, I want to see a room where black is not just the majority, but where I know that everywhere I'm looking, I see an African value system that is respected and promoted. You go around the world and the Europeans have that. White skin is seen as exactly what it is in the modern world. It is clearly an established badge of primacy. You mess with this white man, you can do that. Just understand he's got a whole bunch of hundreds of millions of white people back in the U.S. and a few hundred million more in Europe who are backing him to the hilt. This is the reason why a white girl goes missing in Aruba and it's international news. Meanwhile, at least 3 to 5 black women go missing every day there, and nobody cares. That wipe comes from a constituency that understands that it's not enough to simply have power. It must be exercised for your group's benefit. That's the reason why you go messing with a white woman. You understand that there's going to be front page news there. Spike Lee was complaining the other day, and I put complaining in a positive sense. I love Brother Lee. Nonetheless, he was complaining that Harlem's being gentrified out of existence, at least the way you thought you knew it. And he said, why is it that it took white people moving into Harlem for the trash to finally get picked up? White, the trash get picked up in Brooklyn and the black area of Queens until white people started moving in and gentrifying. Now all of a sudden the trash is getting picked up. And he said, you know that something has changed in Harlem when you see white women pushing babies in their strollers at 3 o'clock in the morning. Who the hell is pushing their baby stroller at 3 in the morning? White people do. And why are they doing it in Harlem? Because of increased police presence. But the police presence there ain't going to pull some white woman over and shoot her 41 times.
Now,
they already know that.
Let me co-sign Professor Truth here, because I came from Harlem just last year. And I can verify what's, I can verify exactly what you just said. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and white women were walking up and down streets where we were with no fear, walking their little poodle dogs about the size of an ice cream cone, the size of a Pop-Tart, these dogs are. But they're marching them around with no fear. None whatsoever. I was talking yesterday about how Mayor de Blasio of New York is finally deciding they want to have a settlement with the Central Park Six, 5 of whom were black males, teenagers, and a white woman, an investment banker, a woman who was white, rich, and privileged. Turns out she wasn't raped by 6 people, she was raped by 1. Fella named Reyes. And yet she was able to get 6 teenagers put behind bars. Teenagers put behind bars. That's what happens when you are white. And you don't want us to talk about that. You don't want us to remind you that that's a damn shame.
Because but it actually goes beyond that, Black Authority. What happened was that white woman, the Central Park jogger, she didn't even remember, she said, because there's a, I got a book written by the New York police detective who was the head of, so-called head of that investigation. And it is shameless what this guy, Detective McKenna was his name. It was shameless he was saying. The woman couldn't remember anything about the assault. That was the problem. She couldn't remember any of it. And yet here they were going, well, we got to be some black kids wilding in the park. And here he was proud of the fact that he didn't really get any evidence on them, but he kept in the phrase, this is how you make the case. In the book over and over again, this is how you make the case. Okay, we didn't have the evidence, but this is how you make the case. They brought in a Hispanic detective, Ramirez was his name, I think, and they got him to basically be their brown face in the room. To say, oh, don't worry, we're not trying to railroad your kids. They brought the kids' parents in. Why did the parents of these kids let them talk to the NYPD, the most corrupt police department on the planet? Because they were smart enough to bring in a brown face to sell it. What was it that Jason said in that video talking about Republicans' fear of a black? The oldest trick in the book when you want to sell someone down the river is to send one of their own people to do it. And in the end, what we found out was, it was, what's his name, Richard Reyes or whatever, the guy was like some sort of train hopping serial killer. And that's, and the thing about it is, as black people, there should have been riots in the streets. If not riots, there should have been demonstrations. People should have been put on trial. That woman, Linda Fairstein, who prosecuted that case, she should be in prison right now. She should have lost her license to practice law. How is it that Mike Nifong loses his license because a black woman allegedly lied about being raped, but a white woman allegedly is raped, and she sits here and says, I can't even remember who raped me. 6 innocent men go to jail, and Linda Fairstein still has her license to practice law. Goes on as if nothing had happened. What does that tell you? What that tells you is that when black people are the ones who get targeted by a system, it is a system working the way it's supposed to. You are supposed to be harassed and harried wherever you go. You are supposed to be guilty until you can until you got a large enough war chest to get yourself off the hook. You are supposed to be tried for crimes. If you spit or jaywalk, you're supposed to be charged with attempted manslaughter. And the jury is supposed to be nothing but angry white people who can't wait to put you in prison. And you're supposed to get the maximum sentence. And you're supposed to get no parole. And you're supposed to, while you're in prison, be subjected to every sort of abuse and humiliation possible. And then when you come out, the only job you're ever going to be getting is working the fries at McDonald's. It's set up. You think it's an accident that it keeps happening that way? Do you think it's an accident that wherever black people go in this country, we're getting hit upside the head? At what point are we going to realize, though, that the reason we're sitting here with all these knots on our noggin is because we're doing something wrong? You cannot win a game whose rules are thoroughly against you. You either quit playing the game, or at the very least, you got to change the rules. And if you think to yourself that you're going to get John Conyers to do it, you're a damn fool. What you just got through saying was that you have learned nothing from the last 45 years of failure of America's so-called leadership class. The only thing you learned is that you like something about John Conyers. Can't tell us what, but you just like it. Maybe you like the fact that he's as ignorant as you are, so you don't feel threatened by him. So you come in this place with Intelligent Black Society, and your knees start knocking. And you start popping a little bit of flop sweat, and your hands start shaking. And next thing you know, you have a full-on coon spasm. You sit there and have Tourette's syndrome for about 10 minutes, like that caller last night, because you're frustrated and you're angry. Or you start talking like a fraud and start saying building doesn't matter. Well, I guess when you got your head up some white woman's behind, I guess building doesn't have a whole lot of priority for you. These are the people, by the way, who in the future, year, in the years to come, they're going to be disappearing. And the truth be told, you're really not even going to notice that these guys are disappearing because the media is not going to be focused on that. They didn't focus on the genocide against the Aborigines of Australia and the utter extermination of the native people of Tasmania. And nobody covered the destruction of the Carib Indians except for Bartholomew de las Casas, who was one of the people taking part in it. See, that's how real power works. You think that on that 39,000 strong, independent black women begging, fighting over 800 housing vouchers in Atlanta, you think white America didn't learn from the coverage that they got? They were like, okay, there's still a few black reporters like Steve Osunsami and such who will cover this. Got to be a little more careful. What they did was they started splitting it up. See, there's still 39,000 black women fighting over housing vouchers in Atlanta, but this time they were smart enough to have them going to different places this time. That way the image won't be so powerful. See, they understand the power of imagery. And if you want to exterminate a group of people, what you don't do is you sit there and make it into a huge spectacle for the world to see. Because when you do that, not only are you going to have to deal with what people will say in the future, but you're going to deal with the fact that that's going to startle people here in the present. Even white people were concerned about what they saw, because the first thing came to their minds was, well, hell, if black people are sitting here fighting over this many housing vouchers with the economy in disarray, that means there ain't going to be no room for white people to fight. There's not even going to be a few set-aside vouchers for white people. So it scared white people. Also got white people, the powers that be, asking themselves, what are we going to do? We got to make sure the genocide will be a lot more quiet. Keep it going. Just be more quiet about it. Be more careful. Be more careful. And that's why you're not hearing about it. And you have never heard about the other silent genocide happening. Well, some of you heard it from Tim Wise, but black people like me have been talking about it for years. There's something on the order of 500,000 to 1 million black people every year. Let me repeat that because I know you didn't hear me. 500,000 to 1 million black people a year die in the United States as the result of inadequate health care or just no health care whatsoever. You have not heard 60 Minutes talk about that. Frontline's not going to tell you about that. The nightly news ain't going to tell you about that. Your so-called white liberal buddies, whether it's Rachel Maddow or Keith Olbermann or whoever the Young Turks are, they're not going to tell you about that because at the end of the day, they really ain't concerned. They're really not concerned about you. What they're concerned about is whether or not they're still going to have their jobs, climbing the ladder. That's what concerns them. And as black people, you may not be very concerned about the quality of health care that black people receive until the first time that you or one of your loved ones wind up in one of these American death chambers. And you realize that you're waiting forever to get health care, to get someone to look at you, And when they do, they're trying to push you right back out the door. They are not trying to find ways to treat your condition. They're just sitting here going, great, this is the waiting room. Waiting for what? Waiting to die. As black people, we need to get serious about the things that we need for our survival. If you don't control the water system, you don't live. And if you don't have supermarkets, you don't eat. If you don't control the farms, if you don't have farms, you don't eat. And if you don't have black people who, A, are trained to be doctors, and B, understand that it is a sacred duty. If you are a black medical practitioner, you have a sacred duty to ensure that black people get proper and adequate medical care. If nobody else in that hospital gives a damn, you're supposed to. You're supposed to make it your mission that when a black person is in your care, it doesn't matter if he's stubbed, if he's having a third degree burns, or if he's having a late stage cancer, or if he's suffering a full on triple bypass heart attack, or if he stubbed his toe. You're supposed to be making sure that they are getting taken care of because nobody else is. I cannot imagine an apathetic or passive or otherwise disinterested Jewish doctor or Jewish nurse. I cannot imagine the Filipinos giving a blah, meh response whenever an Asian comes in. And you damn sure ain't going to find any apathetic Hispanic nurses in California, Texas, Chicago, or anywhere else. That's what brown pride means. When you got a Hispanic nurse, if you're a Hispanic person seeing a Hispanic nurse, what that really means is you're going to get AAA treatment. They're pulling out all the stops. They're going to make sure you get taken care of. And you damn well better believe that a Jew is taken care of when he goes to the hospital. It's like going to a hotel for him. No. As black people, as intelligent black society, we better start getting serious about taking care of our own on all fronts. You are not merely the ambassadors for intelligent black society. You are also its guardians. You are the army that stands between your people and annihilation. Forget about movies like 300. You are that elite. You are the ones who will make sure that your people do not fade from this earth. But you got to see it as a sacred charge that you have been entrusted with. You owe, by the way, you owe this to your descendants. This is not something that we owe to the ancestors. We owe this to our descendants, generations unborn. We have to do the hard work of making sure that they are here. Even if this is somebody who you may have quarrels with, you better make sure that if they're part of intelligent black society, that you are ensuring that they are still around. They are not just your brothers and sisters in arms. They are your early warning system. And they are also the ones who are going to help you to grow this thing. What is this thing? Resurrection and rise of our people. Thank you, Khalid Muhammad. And it couldn't happen with the baby boomers. It had to happen with us. That's the reason why it couldn't begin until now. It had to begin with a generation who was so sick and tired of being sick and tired that they sat there and said, regardless of the odds, regardless of the amount of time, regardless of what I got to sacrifice, I'm down for this to the finish line. Either my people win or we die where we stand. But it's too much for us to sit here just in these blows and not do anything about it. And what did the 7 a.m. crowdfunding prove? It proved what Jason had been saying all along. You are far more powerful than you thought you were. You've got a lot of power, but you just ain't been using it. If you stop buying the new LeBrons, and you stop making R. Kelly rich, and if you stop putting your money into the hands of sports teams, and if you start aggregating that power amongst ourselves, Scott, we have always had all the power that we need. We've always had it. The question was, when are we going to use it? When are we going to use it? Well, it looks like we're using it now. And if the coons and buffoons are still listening, good. what you are hearing with Intelligent Black Society, this is a conversation you ain't going to be part of. Because the white supremacist who called in, isn't it interesting how the coon who called in at the end of last night's episode and the white supremacist who chimed in right behind him, ain't it interesting how they all sound the same? Coons, white supremacists, frauds, baby makers. This is the iron triangle of defeat, of deceit and defeat that we've been up against. But you also notice how we can crush these guys. You see, some people thought that the winning side was going to be talking about club culture. They were going for the low-hanging fruit because it was easy. They didn't want to do all of this black empowerment talk because, well, black people ain't going to go for that. Well, you know, you got to talk about what you know. Yeah, what you know about is bastard babies getting drunk, getting high, and chasing skirts all day. And that's not going to work. So don't be surprised how in the next couple of years, especially after Intelligent Black Society plants its flag and 7 a.m. drops and people realize that there has been a quantum shift, don't be surprised when those white supremacists who chimed in yesterday, don't be surprised when their counterparts in the mainstream media start taking pot shots at us. And don't be surprised as the movement we represent starts to come under heavy fire. We're going to go from being thoroughly ignored to being public enemy number one.
You know, that brings up a very good point because we all know about the Southern Poverty Law Center and how they have their list of so-called hate groups. Well, they also have a classification for black folk on there. That's right. I don't know if they have any for Jewish people or anything like that, but they got one for black folk called Black Separatists. Now, I wonder, what is a hate group about black separatists? How does saying that you don't want to be around someone qualify you as a hate group? You're a hate group because you don't want to be around something. They are saying that black people who do not want to associate with people qualify the same as the Ku Klux Klan who go around hunting black people down. So what that means is that they've already got you targeted. They already got the SPLC ready. You start talking about black empowerment too much, we can move you on over here, this black separatist. You're talking about black empowerment, but you're talking about it separate from white people. You're talking about an independent black economy, and that is black separatism. They're just trying to dress it up as something new, but it's black separatism. I'm telling you, these are the tools and the tricks of the trade. They are already ready for you. They've already got a box to put you in. They've already got something to pigeonhole you with. They've already got the devices in place where they can start attacking us for saying that we want our own banks, that we don't want to have to rely on you anymore. We want our own bank. Separatists. And that's why we need our own media so that we can start calling out groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center if they try something like that. Brothers and sisters, Morris Dees, when he came to Shreveport for Black History Month here, and we were honoring the immortal Ossie Davis. Morris Dees was here that night and was invited on stage to speak before Ossie did. Morris Dees now, this is the man who was most credited, or should we say, for suing the Ku Klux Klan. Morris Dees sat up there on that stage. You all go find out if you can find somebody who will tell you about that stuff. I was there that night. I heard him with my own ears. Morris D. said that he was not in favor of affirmative action. Morris D. said that, and I heard it with my own ears. And we had news stations there, TV stations there, so there may be video of it somewhere. That was what Morris D. said. That he understood that the bar exam, the bar exam to be a lawyer, I forget what state he was saying it was for, but he was saying that the bar exam, he said it used to be optional. But once black people started wanting lawyers in large numbers after the Civil Rights Movement, next thing you know, here comes the bar. And he said, now I want to make sure that I'm clear on one thing. I'm not in favor of affirmative action, but I recognize when these kind of tactics are used. I'm not going to let you get away with slipping something like that in there. You wait till Ossie Davis Appreciation Night to say something like that. Brothers and sisters, they're going to make sure. They are going to make sure that they are declared. And that's why we need our own media. We need our own media with people who put together thorough, professional productions like Hidden Colors and whatnot. When they take a look at that kind of thing and see that you have an outlet for communicating with your people, you see, they wait to see if you're just going to be a one-hit wonder. They wait to see if you're only going to be able to make this crack off one time. Or do you have a pattern? Right now, they're ignoring Tariq Nasheed. If Hidden Colors 3 does better than all the others, Tariq better watch out because his days of being ignored are probably going to be numbered. And with something like 7 a.m. following up right behind it, understand our days of being ignored are about to come to a crashing halt. Why? Because we represent the streets. And white supremacy was calling in, and the frauds and fakes and coons, they are after us because they recognize that we represent the streets. They don't represent the streets. You take a look at how we could galvanize all these young black people. They recognize when somebody comes along and can galvanize young black minds, they want to know. Who is it who's speaking for the streets? Lil Wayne ain't got no juice around here. Coonery. And they want to know who has the ear of the young people. They want to know, are you still chasing the frauds of basketball and rap? Those are going to be the magical keys to Nirvana. That's going to be the magic bullet. Work hard and you can get a record contract from us. He. Knowing full damn well you can't. They want to know if black kids are still out there chasing that carrot in front of the horse. They want to know if you're still doing that. And now they're looking around and seeing the kids aren't chasing that carrot on the stick anymore. Something else has got their minds right now. Something else has got their attention. Somebody else has their ear. Somebody else is speaking for the street now. Coon rap and homo thugging isn't speaking for the young people. See, when they hear young people like Ariel and Hussein and his sister, when they hear young people like that calling in and listening, when they hear the 20-something-year-olds calling in and listening, they know that this is going to be the black street of the 21st century. And they know how much hell the Arab street is giving them over there. Now you got black street rising up. You haven't about a black street since the Panthers. You haven't heard about a black street since the Panthers. And we are reintroducing the concept and the idea of a black street today. And it scares them to death because this is a street that we control. There are no seats at this table for white supremacy. I'm not trying to be famous. I never have. I don't worry about being famous. But I worry about the message, or should I say, I concern myself with the message being well known. And when they see us building this thing from the ground up and they had no hand in it, that makes them afraid. White supremacists were not calling in last night because they're not worried. They're calling in because they're scared to death. Because, and understand, I do not put it past the Department of Homeland Security to have been agents on the phone last night. I do not put it past them. Taking our temperature, seeing what we're made of, seeing how we think and seeing how we react, wanting to know, okay, he didn't react that way when it was a black coon on the phone at fool. Let's see what happens when some white supremacists call in. Let's see how he reacts to that. Let's see if we can take him off his game. Let's see if it's just a front. Let's see if it's just a show. They tried it. I'm not putting it past them, brother. I'm not putting it past them. That they want to check and see, is this real? Or is this just a facade? Do they live for something else? What do we have to do to take them off their game? So you all need to know, they are watching us with a microscope right now. They're watching every move. They're watching every word. They want to know how far this really goes, how much leg this thing has really got. They want to know. Brother Truth, you remember with COINTELPRO. Would I be out of my gourd? Would I just be sitting here having delusions of grandeur if I said that I think that it's possible that some of the individuals last night claiming to be racist calling in were in fact agent provocateurs? Would I be too far? Would that just be too far in the realm of fantasy to say that?
Well, actually, it might be. I mean, has the government ever targeted civil rights leaders like, say, Martin Luther King and had FBI agents calling his home trying to break up his marriage with lies about King committing adultery, which is a complete lie, or sending letters saying, Brother King, you are a traitor and a commie, and this is black people talking to you. These were white FBI agents writing those letters, white FBI agents sending those phone calls. And it was white men like J. Edgar Hoover and Robert Kennedy who had them doing it. So as far as we already know, 7 a.m. got a lot of attention. You cannot sit here and have a group of people led by an ideology. And one of the main spokesmen for this movement is a man whose face no one has ever seen. That scares them. They're sitting here going, who are these people? Where in the world do they come from? We don't have an answer for this. You dog right. That's the reason why what happened last night happened. And, you know, truth be told, it doesn't really matter if it was, if these were, you know, could perhaps government agents or what have you. It's not out of the possibility at all. Or if it was just garden variety white trash. It doesn't really matter because they're all on the same team. They are all playing for the same squad, operating out of the same playbook for the same purpose. So when these guys call up, they're not going to get us off our game. They're not going to get us off our strategy. This is white supremacy's last gasp. They could well be on their last legs, and it's going to be our honor to knock them over. But I also got to tell black people, don't start celebrating too soon. When 7 a.m. starts taking to the airwaves, what's going to happen is the white supremacists, we know their playbook, so there's no harm in telling what they're going to do. We already know it. First order of business is ignore it. And when that fails, they're then going to sit there and try to malign and slander us. And when they realize that the people we're talking to could care less what the white media says, then they're going to say, okay, it's time for plan C. We got to co-opt it. And next thing you know, you're going to hear people on MSNBC and CNBC. Yes, if you're talking about black empowerment, it's going to be on the financial networks. And you're going to find people on Fox going out of the business network. And you're going to find white people on MSNBC and everywhere else saying, oh, this black militant talk thing, this, and calling themselves intelligent black society. Well, we wanted to talk to some people about that. In the studio, we have Skip Gates. And we have Larry Elders, Taylor Perry. What they're going to do is they're going to bring in the usual suspects, their hand-picked, homegrown coon Negroes, and those will be the ones who they sit there and put in front of the cameras. As long as they have a media monopoly, that's going to be plan C. At some point, they're going to try to get people to feel that the clowns and coons can speak for us. That's the reason why we must own this movement top to bottom and make it clear that the road to intelligent black society begins and ends here at theblackchannel.net. We're not going to allow the dominant society's mouthpieces to put a few front Negroes in front of the camera and say, yeah, these guys are representatives of intelligent black society. No. If you didn't get the stamp of approval here, then you don't get to speak for us. So for all of the white supremacists lurking, we know you ain't gone away. Just understand, we already know what your strategy is. We've got the contingencies in place. How do you think we got this far? You never saw us coming. See, we may not have the same number of resources that you got, but what we got, we know how to use. Your strategy is shock and awe. Our strategy is run silent, run deep. And that's the reason why we're going to win. We're not trying to be the flashiest. Our strategy is not winning the next battle. It is on winning the war. We understand that if you got a larger opponent who happens to be at more numerous, then what you got to do is you got to be more agile than him. You also got to be sneakier than him. If this guy is clever, you better be more clever. And you didn't expect that. And the coons who you got on your payroll who depend on you for every crumb of their daily bread, they weren't expecting this either. And the black people who weren't really sure intelligent black society was going to be the horse that would win the race, they're starting to understand now that, yes, it can be done. That, yes, you did indeed choose the winning side. And that's why we're going to be only gaining momentum from here. We have a group, we have an entire people who have lost confidence in themselves, have lost their way, and intelligent black society is the light. We are the ones who will get this thing back on track. We are the ones who generations from now they're going to be talking about and saying, man, didn't seem possible at first, but it went from impossible to unstoppable. It always seems that way to the people who weren't here 5 years ago. The day one people, they know this wasn't some overnight success, and they also know that it's not a flash in the pan. And we're, by the way, I know this is kind of going to go in the woods a little bit, but yeah, I go ahead and rail against Shonda Rhimes all the time because she deserves it. And I go ahead and take a couple of pot shots at Issa Rae simply because I don't like the fact that she was handpicked and pushed by people who are not operating in our interests. But I don't think that there's anything wrong with entertainment per se. It just shouldn't be the dominant media that you take in every day. Information is supposed to come first. Entertainment is supposed to be a part-time diversion. But I'm also not blind to the fact that America largely is an entertainment-centered culture. A lot of the racism and bigotry that was taught to people was taught to them through the media from the time that they were children. That's how you get all those Max Fleischer cartoons where every time you look up, there's some, you know, Sambo character running around. And Walt Disney, who said that as long as he lived, no black person was ever going to work for his company. That edict remained in place even after his death. That's how you get stuff like the coonish birds in Dumbo. I done seen about everything. And that's how you get all the other coony, like Song of the South from Disney. And that's how you get all the other stuff like The Lion King. They sat there and appropriated the story of Sundiata Kieta, the first great leader of Mali, who was, and his name literally meant the Lion King. He had a number of names. One of his names meant the Lion King. And who the cast? All white people. The only black person in the cast of the Lion King was James Earl Jones, and he got killed. What a surprise. White need for the black character to die because that's comforting to them. So that's what Disney does. And then they put out the Frog Princess. She's not really a princess, by the way. What happens is she's just called a princess for the New Orleans Mardi Gras, and she gets turned into a frog in like the first 5 minutes of the movie. And why did Disney do that? Because they didn't turn Ariel into a fish, and they didn't turn Sleeping Beauty into an apple, and they damn sure didn't turn Cinderella into a pumpkin, but they turned their so-called first black princess into a frog. She can't be a human being for most of the movie. Why? Because as Disney said, and you could almost predict it before they said it, well, it's the audience. The audience won't accept a black princess. Where it's not us being backwards, it's the audience.
Isn't that amazing how they can always get away with that little canard of sitting up here and blaming the victim for their